Friends, I'm very anxious for you to meet a man whom I have been admiring for some time since coming to Manila. Mr. K.A. Pearson. He is a Norwegian. He came out into the Orient a great many years ago, and in 1941 was accredited to the pre-Norwegian press, and he also had privileges in the radio in this area, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, made him one of the most hated of the Allied nationals in this area because of the bitterness which we had for the Nazis during the days when we were fighting Germany. He was liberated from Manila February the 9th of this year, having been here throughout the entire Japanese occupation. And now I'm going to question him briefly, and I think you're going to be fascinated by his answers. Mr. Pearson, where were you when the Japanese struck at Pearl Harbor?
I had arrived in Manila from Shanghai with my wife only a few hours before it happened. We were on our way to Washington and scheduled to continue the voyage from here on one of the president liners.
Well, specifically, where had you been?
For many years, in fact, since November 1918, I had lived in China, most of the time in Shanghai.
Well, why didn't you get out of Manila before it was too late?
Well, that was not so easy, especially after the war had started. Especially since I felt the risk was too great as far as my wife was concerned. Besides, I felt I wanted to help the American authorities if that were at all possible.
Well, was this your first contact with war?
No, it seems my whole life has been a succession of wars and troubles and unrest. I spent the First World War at sea, the greater part of it in Norwegian sailing ships, square eggers as we term them, or Cape Horners. I was in Philadelphia when the United States declared war on Germany the first time. I have also watched the many provincial scraps in China, the fighting and coming to power of Chiang Kai-shek in 1927, and the Japanese war around and in Shanghai in 1932, and the war in Shanghai of 1937, which of course they also termed a mere incident.
Well, was your contact with the Japanese here in Manila your first experience with these people?
As you will note from what I have already said, it was by no means my first contact with the barbarians from Nippon. I have had them in my hair, so to speak, for 10 years before I met up with them here.
I suppose then that perhaps you had formulated some kind of an opinion of the alleged Japanese mind and psychology.
Most decidedly. I have had what you might term some excellent opportunities, including my experience with the Japanese military police, because I had the doubtful privilege of spending a little time in Fort Santiago, and undoubtedly you heard about that place.
That couldn't have been good.
No. Bear in mind also that I saw the brutes in action in China. And it has always been the same pattern. They have always run true to form, and they have always improved on their bestiality. The Japanese must be considered subhumans. In fact, I think I should prefer the Java man of a million years ago. He killed of necessity. The Japanese killed to satisfy an innate lust for blood and sadism. And then there is, of course, the fanatical desire to die for the emperor and become divinities. As you know, it's not only a soldier who commits harakiri in Japan. This suicidal trait is an honorable end to a Jap's frustration. But I'm afraid the subject is somewhat too complicated to be dealt with in a brief conversation.
I think that becomes obvious, Mr. Pearson. Do you think that the Japanese had anything constructive in mind when they came into the Philippines?
There has never been any constructive attitude on the part of the Japanese, except as far as their own empire and their selfish ambitions are concerned. History bears ample witness to that. They have been good imitators, nothing else. The only thing I believe they have really invented was a flytrap, which sold extensively in China. Wherever they have set their squat feet, misery and want have invariably followed. Their slogan of Asiatic co-prosperity was bound to become a boomerang, and it has, as you very well know.
Well, Mr. Pearson, did the looting that has so desolated Manila begin immediately upon their occupation, or did it come a little later?
The Japs began their systematic looting when they entered Manila in January 1942, and they have been ever at it ever since, as long as there was anything to loot, of course. After they interned the Americans and British here, they made a thorough job of ransacking their homes. All the department stores were, of course, cleaned out. Most of it went to Japan, the best of it, and as long as they had any ships to take care of it. Later on, due to heavy shipping losses, it became a problem for them to remove things, and they also had to live more and more on the land for the same reason.
Well, although you weren't interned here, that is to say, you weren't actually in prison, did you have in the city itself any freedom whatsoever?
To a certain extent, yes. That is to say, within Manila itself, especially during the first 2 years. As long as the war went in their favor, you see, the official attitude at least was one of toleration for those outcasts who could not claim the privilege of being born a member of the emperor's tribe. Their attitude is best described by themselves, those who were candid enough to say so. For instance, Commandant Maccaibo, credited with being a graduate of Harvard University and a doctor of divinity, if you please, ushered some 500 American, British, and other nationals into the concentration camp at Baguio with these words, "Remember, you Americans are merciful, we are not." After the worthy commandant had spoken, a group of Jap infantrymen fired their rifles into the air to make it perfectly clear to the prisoners that means were at hand for enforcing Japanese protective custody, as they termed the internment of all, including women and children, the aged and the sick.
Were the Japanese, that is, the Filipino natives here, apprehensive from the start of the occupation, or did their apprehension come later?
Yes, we were all apprehensive, the Filipinos and the foreigners, I suppose, except the Nazi and some other pro-Axis individuals. But the Japanese military did their best to dispel that feeling, especially in the case of the Filipinos. But then came the death of thousands of Filipino and American prisoners of war, the death march from Bataan, the slapping of faces by Jap sentries and Jap civilians. And then came a period of attempted kindness, urging collaboration with the benevolent Asiatic brothers from Nippon. Then came the reverses, and the Jap inferiority complex really began to show its true colors. Then the last year, 1944. From the 1st of February, when the military took over also the civilian internment camps. Then the last few months before the American entry, the building of barricades in the streets, the digging of holes for mines, the forced labor.
Well, did you have an opportunity to visit any of these occupation camps, that is, where the prisoners were, or were you prohibited?
It was possible during the first 2 years to obtain permission to visit internees, and the internees could also obtain passes for longer or shorter periods to leave the camp, mainly in the cases of illness. We could also send in parcels of food, clothing, and money, because all of that was stopped on February the 1st, 1944, when the military authorities took over the camp.
Mr. Pearson, was the arrival of American forces here in Manila your first real personal contact with Americans and their methods?
I have always been a keen student of American ways of life and Americans. Don't forget, I am a Norwegian. I have always entertained a sincere admiration, and I can truthfully say, a real affection for your people, a considerable number of whom, as you know, hail from our shores. We knew America. That is why we also knew the war would be won.
I believe you plan an immediate return to the United States, do you not?
Yes. In fact, I am promised a plane for tomorrow morning. After 37 months, as you may imagine, under Jap domination, I feel a change of surroundings is necessary. But I am planning to return to see the American forces enter Tokyo.
Do you plan to go to Norway during your visit in the United States?
That will depend on my conversations with the Norwegian ambassador to Washington. Since I have only visited my country once for a period of 7 weeks in 1928, I naturally want to get back. And I have not heard from my family there for more than 4 years. Besides, I want so much to help in the reconstruction of a country which has suffered so much under the Nazi yoke.
And now, Mr. Pearson, I have a question for you that may sound a little pointed, but I want to know what we should do with the Philippines, in your personal opinion.
That is what you might term a leading question. And I think it has already been decided. You will keep your promise of independence to the Filipinos. America has never yet broken her promises. I do not even have to quote Senator Tidings to state that.
Well, should they be given their independence completely, or should we make certain reservations?
Oh, that's another leading question, and one that a diplomat might evade, but I'm not a diplomat. The reservations, in my opinion, would be strong military bases in the islands. And talking of independence, every nation in the world should realize by bitter experience that no country can anymore be quite independent of another. Politically, the world has changed fundamentally. We are all interdependent and have to think less of national boundaries, custom barriers, and the rest of the pre-war muddle if we are to preserve a lasting and just peace.
What's the situation over in China? You've spent a lot of time there. Is it hopeful?
As it is more than 3.5 years since I left, and as I was naturally cut off from all communications with the outside world during the Japanese occupation, I'm afraid I'm not in a position to express any expert opinion at present. I can say this, however, that I consider the situation very hopeful, also after victory against Japan has been won. I have come to like China and the Chinese very much during my many years of stay in their country. They are truly a great people. Thanks to their energy and philosophy of life, they will recover faster, probably, than any other nation in the Far East, despite more than 8 years of war and suffering. There are, of course, many imponderables, and there are many problems, difficult problems, to be solved before China can take a rightful place amongst the United Nations.
Mr. Pearson, in your personal opinion, is there a possibility that the war out here in the Pacific might end quickly?
Well, to that I ought to reply like Churchill, I think, that I am not a prophet. But what I have seen of the Japanese makes me believe that they will go on to almost complete destruction. There is a possibility that the war could end quickly, but it would require not a long talk to tell you why. Personally, my guess, for what it is worth, is that the war will last 1.5 years longer. Bet that period will be shortened by 6 months at least if Russia entered the war against Japan.
One more reaction now, and I'm going to let you go, Mr. Pearson. What do you think of our American fighting man?
Well, that is a question which I find it both easy and difficult to answer. Difficult because it is very hard to describe certain feelings. You must remember that I owe my life, and what is more, my liberty from Japanese bondage to the United States of America. That is why I want to return here and remain with the men and try to tell the story of their gallantry, their devotion to duty, and their magnificent fighting prowess, not only to my own countrymen, but if at all possible to the American public as well. I want them to know what a Norwegian feels about it all. Those perimeters on dark, moist nights in the jungle, the savage fighting against a mad, subhuman horde, the heat, the mosquitoes, the malaria, the nervous exhaustion which can and do play havoc with the strongest character and physique. It's a fight to death, to kill or be killed. But the Americans have what it takes, and a lot more besides. Words can be cheap, and as often as not, it is impossible to do justice to what one sees and hears every hour of the day and night. And they seem so many and so long, these days and nights. But the GI know that at the end of the road, there is home, America, and their loved ones, for whom they are perfectly willing to give all. It is only when you are on actual combat and try to share their struggles that you realize, deep down in your heart of hearts, what a colossal debt not only their own country, but the world owe to these men.
I agree with you heartily, Mr. Pearson. And I thank you personally for all of Arizona for this expression so sincerely and so intently made. Friends, Mr. Pearson is a Norwegian by birth and by citizenship. He's been out here in the Orient a great many years. He went through the Japanese occupation of Manila. I'm sure you've gathered from his remarks that he is an authority on what has happened out here and what may happen in the future. I thank him and hope he has a marvelous trip to the United States and can return for the entrance into Tokyo, as he has suggested he should certainly love to do. I think we now have, shortly within a few minutes, here in Manila, an interview with General Stilwell. So we'll let you go now until another time. And here is Fred McPherson.